Everyone, I'd like to welcome and call to order the City of Columbia Thursday, August 23rd, 2018 Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Tui.
Here.
I am here. Ms. Lowe. Mr. Harder.
Here.
Mr. McMahon.
Present.
Mr. Stanton.
Here.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Here.
Ms. Russell. We have seven. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Moving on, approval of agenda. Any changes to our agenda this evening, Mr. Zinner?
No, there are not, sir.
Thank you. Approval of minutes. Commissioners, we were sent out the August 9th, 2018 minutes. Were there any changes or corrections needed for the August 9th minutes? I see none. For those that were in attendance of the August 9th meeting, a thumbs up for approval of those minutes. We have those four that were here. A thumbs up. Thank you. Moving on to our first and only cases this evening. At this time, I would ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to this case 18 to case 18-115, please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. I see none. Case 18-115, a request by Cypress Creek Renewables LLC on behalf of Dunlop Development LLC, seeking to rezone a 93.85-acre property located on the south side of I-70 Drive Southeast, approximately 2,000 feet east of St. Charles Road. The property is currently zoned A, which is an agricultural district, and the applicant is requesting approval of PD, the plan district zoning, and a development plan to allow installation of a privately owned and operated 10 megawatt solar energy facility. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you said, the location of the project is south of I-70 Drive Southeast, and it's actually located between the Route Z and the St. Charles Road exit. The applicants are requesting to rezone the 93.85 acres west of the creek, which can kind of be made out here on this plan. It'll become a little more noticeable later, but it kind of runs through this corridor here where the vegetation is. So the request is to rezone to a plan district, and they're also requesting approval of their development plan. So we actually re-advertised this after our previous tabling request because it surpassed 2 months since the original application date. So these dates are from the most recent public info meeting on July 31st, 29 postcards were mailed, and then we published notice on August 7th and also sent property owner notice on the 7th, and the same 29 were mailed at that time. So a little bit of background information. The request is actually a result of a city request for proposals. Applicants were the winning bidders for a solar farm project. In order to bolster the city's renewable energy sources. They have entered into a power purchase agreement with the city water and light department. And part of the connection will actually require an extension of two feeder lines between this property and the, what was the name of that?
Rebel Hill.
Rebel Hill substation that was built a few years back. So part of the initial process, the city legal department determined that the project is not a public utility. The question there is there are different standards in the UDC for public utilities and private utilities. So that'll play in just a moment. So now on to land use considerations. The site is located within the neighborhood district in the comprehensive plan, and it has open space and green belt designation along the stream corridor. So it typically wouldn't be considered consistent with that land use category in the comprehensive plan. However, PDs are intended to allow a mix of uses when there are adverse impacts to neighboring properties and when those adverse impacts are screened and buffered from those neighboring properties. So just for some context, this is a city zoning map. I've got the site there outlined in red. You can see MC to the immediate northwest. The striped area just south of that is PD, which is commercial in nature also. The going further south, you have R2 and R1. This parcel to the south, the adjacent piece here is zoned RS, which is in the county. The remainder of it is also zoned agriculturally. And then again, I believe, of course, this is zoned A to the east, which is the remainder of the Dunlop property. And then further is, I believe, ag also in the county. So as far as zoning is concerned, the solar farm use actually requires industrial zoning. But as a way of kind of limiting the uses that could potentially be placed on this site, staff suggested the use of a plan district. And that is a way of basically protecting the neighboring property owners from some kind of odious use coming in and taking the place of this project if this were to fizzle out at some point. You know, basically having open industrial zoning would allow a number of uses that are not favorable for those property owners. So the PD in this application is deemed appropriate by staff, and the statement of intent and design parameters establish use limitations as well as site design considerations. So the statement of intent basically indicates that a solar farm use, single family and multifamily, and I believe two family also uses are permitted. However, the PD plan will dictate that further. So they are submitting a PD plan with a solar farm on it. So in the future, if they do want to build multifamily or even single family homes, that would be a major amendment to the PD plan, and it would come back through the same public process. So the design parameters, they go a little further, and they indicate, you know, there's a 25-foot perimeter setback for all uses on the site. They limit the number of solar panels and their height. So there's 48,000 max solar panels, and they are 12 feet tall. They've indicated they're not going to use any light poles, which typically cause concern for neighbors for light pollution and spillover. They also indicate just 64 square feet of signage with a 12-foot max height with up to one wall and one freestanding sign, which is typical, I believe, of collector roadways for a commercial use. So as I said, the statement of intent indicates that they can that a permitted use would be some type of residential use. However, it doesn't limit the density. But as I said, again, the PD process actually requires that a full PD plan be adopted at the time of the use change because they basically limit their use to the solar farm by having the development plan approved in its current form. So this is their development plan. It's kind of zoomed into the site just to give you an idea. Probably fairly difficult to read, but as you can imagine, the bulk of the site's covered with the solar panels. They have done their best to maintain existing vegetation, at least in those areas that it is prominent, along the stream corridor, along the eastern property boundary, and then also along the drainage channels that you see cutting through the solar panels to the north there. Again, they've provided a 25-foot setback on all sides, and then on the south side, there's some additional setback, which I believe I'll get to in just a second. In terms of tree preservation, because the PD plan acts as the preliminary plat for this property, it is required to. They were required to submit a preliminary tree preservation plan. It is included in their PD plan as a separate sheet. So if you're looking at the map here, the hatched areas that are on the subject property are Climax Forest. The double hatched area towards the south central portion of the site there, that is their designated tree preservation area. And then the orange trees located on the map, scattered around, are significant trees that will be removed. And then the green in the kind of north central area there, those are all that is their 25% significant tree preservation. So they are required by code to maintain 25% of existing Climax Forest on their site, as well as 25% of all significant trees. So the green circles indicate the trees, the significant trees that will remain, and then the double hatched area is the tree preservation plan area, or tree preservation area. So one other thing that will actually be part of the platting process, but it has to be kind of accommodated for on the PD plan, is the dedication of road rights of way. This property is located between two proposed, I believe, major collector roadways. One would be off to the east of the property line of the Dunlop property, the greater Dunlop property, if you will. And then the other is actually along the west property line, and it is located on this subject site. So if you look closely, you can see there is a right-of-way line located here, and it goes the length of the property. That is an area denoted for dedication at time of final plat. So there will be sufficient road right-of-way there for a major collector, which was on the CATSO plan, so it was required of them. As a part of the PD process, the applicants are allowed to ask for certain waivers from aspects of the code. One aspect they are asking for a waiver from are the parking requirements. The solar farm use has little to no traffic. It has basically a maintenance worker in one vehicle that would make a couple of trips a month, maybe. And then the parking requirement in the code is actually based on gross floor area. For industrial uses, it would be one space for every 1,000 square feet of gross floor area. And as a matter of definition, there is no gross floor area on the site, just based on the definition of that, I guess, in the code. So no buildings on site, and access drives are provided across the site. So I believe, you know, maneuvering and parking is accounted for along those access drives. So I believe that the waiver in this instance is probably permissible. Another waiver they are seeking is from screening requirements. Any location on the property adjacent to a residentially zoned district would be required a level 3 screen, which is the highest level. The only location on this site that is adjacent is along the south edge with this residentially zoned property here. Because the road right-of-way is between these houses and the subject site, they are not considered to be adjacent in that location. So it would be a lesser, I believe it would be, is there still screening requirements? There are potentially other screening requirements there. I believe I've addressed that, but I seem to have a blank in my head on that right now. But anyway, so along the south edge, they would be required a 10-foot wide landscape strip, and then they would also be required an 8-foot tall screening device that would have to be located on the property line, and the landscape strip would be on their side on their property, according to the code. So as an alternative, they have provided an 8-foot tall screening device at a 75-foot setback on the south side. That way they can preserve the existing vegetation, which Doesn't appear to be much, but there's a fair amount of significant trees and mature trees, at least, along that property line. So they propose to move their fence. Essentially, they're using a wooden privacy fence in that location, and they intend to pull that back to a 75-foot setback to save the mature trees in that location. And then also, it horizontally separates the solar farm from any potential development on this property to the south. And the same is true for the west side of the property. The road right-of-way acts as a horizontal separation. I believe it's 60 feet of separation from the original property line to the new property line. And then also, they have the 25-foot setback, and then they are proposing an 8-foot tall screening device, which would be a wooden privacy fence in that location. And again, that's at the 25-foot setback line. One final waiver is for the requirement for street trees. The code requires street trees along all road frontages at 40-foot intervals. The roadway on the north, I-70 Drive Southeast, is a total of about 2,600 feet of roadway frontage, which would amount to about 65 trees, and they're requesting the waiver from that requirement. Normally, the other aspect is the west side again. They are offering the road right-of-way, and then typically street trees in those locations will be considered part of the construction of the roadway, because roadway construction will actually do damage to any trees planted beforehand. So basically, the City Traffic Division has stated that they don't expect the applicants to construct the roadway, and so therefore they would take the responsibility for sidewalks and street trees in that location as well. It'll all be part of that street construction project in the future. Another thing I kind of skipped that I noticed here, the reason for the street tree waiver request was because the initial contract negotiations, as I stated, this is all the kind of the culmination of an RFP process through the city. Contract negotiations were had, and then the applicant applied for the rezoning based on the legal determination that they are not a public utility. Their contract negotiations were under the assumption that they would be considered a public utility, and so therefore the installation of the street trees required would be cost prohibitive for them. So that's the reason for the request. So on to our recommendation. I believe staff actually is supportive of the project because of its uniquely low impact for an industrial use. The screening and buffering requirements for the industrial use were likely considered for much more obnoxious uses, such as, I can't think of an industrial use off the top of my head. But
factories,
smelting plants, quarries, so on and so forth, which is not what this project is, obviously. Alternative design that they've proposed utilizes existing trees and moves the solar farm functions further from neighboring uses, again, trying to limit those negative and adverse impacts. So staff's recommendation would be for approval of the rezoning and approval of the development plan as proposed. I believe that is all.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Commissioners, any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Planner Palmer, I have a question for you, and I'll ask the gentleman again who owned this property, but from a PD perspective, it appears that they are limited to 12 feet high and 48,000 units. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Can you explain to me the process if their technology changes and they've got to change those parameters?
Basically, if they would, let's say that technology allows them to use smaller solar panels.
Or so taller or what?
So anything above and beyond that threshold would have to come back through the public process that we're going through now. The height, I believe, would still be considered a major amendment and would go through the public process all over again. And I do know that the additional solar panels above the 48,000 threshold would require it. So they would have to basically restart the rezoning process.
I think, Mr. McMahon, if the ticket...
As an amendment to PD, right?
It would be a major amendment, though. So it's the same as the process they're using now.
That's my question.
To further add, I think, just for clarification, if, in fact, they were to consolidate, so we're doing 48,000 panels right now, and the technology comes to where they may be able to build a supercell, super solar cell, and they're able to reduce the 48,000 to some smaller number. Generally, when we go down, when you reduce anything from the maximums that are established, that's a minor amendment internally. Now, there is there is discretion associated with how our code is written as to what does constitute or what the director has authorization to consider a minor. And the director is not obligated that even if they are reducing impact to consider it a minor. So if the panel size increased by fourfold and reduced the total number, that would be something at the discretion of the director if he felt that that was significant enough. It could come back through the process as a major amendment, even though it is under the maximum parameters. The other issue associated with that, with any minor amendment that we end up doing, it is circulated internally as a part of our regular internal review process. Stormwater considerations associated with this project have gone through a quite significant vetting process with our own internal stormwater staff in order to be comfortable that this particular project is not adversely impacting stormwater runoff. So I think any types of changes that may consolidate or expand the facility in height, width, or whatever other dimensional standard we have is going to be something that's going to be viewed significantly, reviewed significantly to ensure that it is not creating an impact that was not intended or contemplated as we are considering this proposal right now. The one thing Mr. Palmer did not point out is this site, short of the tree preservation areas, currently is agricultural in nature. It's field. It will be entirely disturbed through a legal land disturbance permit process, and it will be reestablished. The reestablishment of this particular site, actually, in order to deal with our stormwater requirements, the entire site is a stormwater BMP. We will have actually a separate BMP agreement that is coordinated with our utilities department to ensure that the runoff that's generated from these panels is adequately addressed as it comes off the panels and on the existing site so that the flow coming off of the property is no greater after it is developed than it is today, which is a tenant of our current stormwater ordinance. The impact that the improved site creates can't be more significant. So there may be BMP efforts made along the southern property line, which is where generally this project drains toward, but the entire area underneath the panels is actually a massive BMP. It'll be reseeded and basically become the collection point for the water that comes off of them. There was a very lengthy discussion with our stormwater staff, and that is part of what resulted in some of the delays, if you recall correctly. We were trying to get our arms wrapped around the BMP and the stormwater impacts to where we as a city staff were comfortable that it was not creating anything adverse. So with that, we do have representatives from, or a representative here this evening from Water and Light, if you have any specific questions as it relates to any of the water and light aspects. Ryan Williams, our Assistant Utilities Director, is here this evening. Otherwise, we're more than happy to answer any additional questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioners, yes, Mr. Toohey.
Mr. Palmer, can you go back to your previous slide about the buffering? And so did I see somewhere that essentially you guys were okay with reducing the buffering standards because something about essentially they didn't budget for that buffering? Is that correct?
It's actually on the following. The reason they are asking for a waiver from the street tree requirement was because of the initial contract negotiations they made with Water and Light were not taking into account the fact that they would need to plant these street trees because they were thinking they would be considered a public utility and none of those requirements would be in place at that point. But because legal made the determination after the contract negotiations that they were not a public utility, they were a private utility, then that kicked in the need for the rezoning and the requirements from the UDC.
Okay.
Any additional questions, commissioners? I see none. We'll go ahead before I open up for a public hearing. It is a public hearing, but we'd like to limit it to 3 minutes per speaker. If there's a large group from the applicant side, we would just ask to try to keep it to different topics for each of the speakers so we don't hear the same thing over and over. And then we'll go from there. Also, we'd like to have your name and address before you start speaking to us, just for a formality, and then we'll go from there. So we'll go ahead and open up our public hearing. So anyone would like to come forward and start us off?
So I'll start us off. My name is Scott Novak. That's N-O-V-A-C-K. I am a project developer with Cypress Creek Renewables. So we are the applicant. I'm at 18 South Michigan Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Rusty did a wonderful job, a very detailed job of going through our application and through his report. And that report contained a lot of high level and kind of more zoomed in detail about our project. And given the limited time, I'm not gonna spend time rehashing anything that Rusty covered. I did wanna introduce myself, check off that, I've already done that, but I also wanted to talk about the team that I've brought with, who will all be available to answer questions. So we've got Mike Caruso, he's a licensed professional engineer in Missouri. He's a civil engineer, so he'll be available to answer questions relating to any land development issues, whether it be drainage or anything else related to the land. We've got Andrew Lyons, he's with Cone Resnick. He's a MAI certified general appraiser, and he'll be able to answer questions as they relate to property values, impact of property values. We also have Lowell Pearson, who's an office managing partner at Hush Blackwell. He's an attorney. So we have a number of folks here that hopefully any questions that come up from the public, that come up from your commission as we go through the evening, we'll be happy to address. I did just want to say a few words about, is that three
Time's
already
on.
Or no, two?
Go, you keep one.
Okay. Sorry. Just really quick. Rusty mentioned it, but you know, in most jurisdictions, we are a special use or an allowable use in an ag district. And I think that that's really relevant and pertinent and worth exploring just in that solar, I know that the term industrial was used. We certainly don't view it as an industrial development. You know, there's no traffic to speak of. Everything's below 12 feet. There's no harmful noise. There's really no noise that spills over the property line at all. So it's a really low impact use that's compatible with really any other land use that you can think of, whether it be residential, agricultural, you know, street frontage on a highway. So we really feel great about solar. That's why we develop it all over the country. But in particularly, we've had success because we are committed to being a part of a community and fitting in. And so I just wanted to say those brief words and again, let you know that we're available to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Commissioners, any questions for the speaker? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How long have you all been doing this, sir?
Cypress Creek was founded in 2014. Okay. But it was founded by a number of people who have over 10, 20 years experience
in the business.
Solar.
They won.
Correct.
And how many facilities do you guys manage or are installing as we speak?
We manage about 230 facilities all over the country. I'll just really quickly advance. So we did have this just in case we had a little bit. So we're a national company. We're a developer, builder, and owner-operator of solar farms. So we're operating about 230 solar farms currently. We've successfully developed over 2.2 gigawatts, and we actually hit that figure at the end of last year. And we've got a development pipeline that's about 3 to 4 times larger our existing operating assets. So
At the point, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to illustrate a little bit.
And
yeah.
I appreciate that, but we're taking everyone else's time. Any serious problems today? Neighbors, laws, EPA, equivalent of DNRs, years in court, things like that.
We've really been well received. There's questions on the front end, particularly in areas that are not familiar with solar. And I know that's not exactly the case here in Columbia. I know there's some existing small solar mm-hmm. installations. But, you know, generally in parts of the country, and this is very common, where there isn't solar, there's a lot of questions on the front end. And there's a lot of misconceptions. So our job is to educate and just make sure people know what it is we're proposing. But we've been really, really well received across the country.
And that's I'm good for the moment. Thank you, sir.
Any additional questions, speakers?
I had a couple. It shows on your first picture just this land is covered with solar panels.
Right.
Do those panels, the first question is, do those panels emit any energy at all?
Like radiation or any heat?
I assume they're going to send energy off through power lines.
That's correct.
But any emission other than that?
No, so they're designed to absorb as much sunlight as possible, and they're treated with an anti-reflective coating so that they do just that. So there's no radiation or increased temperature off of the solar farm as a result.
Okay, and it also appears that the energy lines will be below ground.
Right. Okay. So they go from the modules themselves underground to inverter and transformer equipment, and then continuing underground to the point of interconnection.
Ms. Burns.
I might be getting ahead in your slideshow, but do you have a slide that shows a panel field that would be close to the size that we're talking about in this proposition?
I have a few slides. One, this is a tracking system. So single-axis tracking means the modules rotate on one axis. This picture is taken midday when the sun's overhead, so it can collect the most sunlight. So this is kind of zoomed in, right? We can't see the scale of this project. I've got another picture a little later on. This is a 5-megawatt project that we developed in Indiana. So it's about half the size. So it'll give a pretty good idea. And actually, this is another one, same scale, different project, also in Indiana, just to give you an idea. And these are nice pictures because you've got the bird's eye on the left, and then you've got what you'd see if you were on the ground looking at it.
Thank you.
Sure.
Additional questions, speakers?
I got one. So going back to this tree buffering, certainly. So your budget is so tight on this, you guys can't afford 65 trees?
It's a really tight budget.
And that's really tight because, you know what a tree costs, right?
I've heard different estimates.
It wouldn't cost you any more than, you know, really. I mean, you're looking at $6,000 to $10,000. So you guys were that tight?
Well,
on a project this big from a company this big?
Right. So that it's a very good question. So the variance request was as a result of a tight budget across kind of that buffer requirement, which also, as Rusty mentioned, was on the inside of the fence, which is something that we didn't deem appropriate in addition to being a cost adder. And then as for the street trees, the idea there was the same thing. We feel like solar farms should be celebrated. Obviously, we're biased. You know, we're in the solar industry. But we like the ability for people, whether it be vehicles or pedestrians walking by, to be able to look in to a solar farm. So between that and the added cost, there's also a maintenance component to street trees. Quite honestly, it's a very tight. We didn't think we were going through this whole process, as Rusty said. And this process itself, you know, with the team I've assembled and the iterations of the plan, it's just a costly project, costly process that we had not budgeted. And so it kind of added up.
Any additional questions, commissioners?
May I quickly follow up on that?
Sure, Mr. Roman.
Thank you very much. If I understood staff correctly, you all thought you were part of a public utility, and now you're a private entity vendor supplier, right?
Right. We thought that was how it would be interpreted from a zoning perspective.
When that transitioned out of the public utility sphere, that was during the contract negotiations, correct?
So I wasn't wholly integrated into the whole process, okay. But as I understand it, it was after the negotiation process and after the power purchase agreement was
negotiated. The RFP had been accepted or was in the process of being accepted after additional expenses came forward. I would just to let you know, we've gone through a very rigorous process for the last couple of years with screening, buffering, stormwater, noise, and light pollution, and that's why we're very sticklers on these questions. That's all the questions I have for him at this time. Thank you.
Any additional questions, commissioners? Thank you, Mr. Novak.
Thank you.
Just another, before the next period, there's a little red light here on the podium. You might see that little blinking. If you see that while you're speaking, you've gone past your 3 minutes. Just, I forgot to say that earlier. But we'd welcome the next speaker as soon as Mr. Novak is done here.
Back up.
Anyone else have come forward? Anyone else from the crowd in general? Anyone that's here tonight is welcome to come forward, or I'll go ahead and close the public hearing if no one else wants to come forward.
My name is Tim Wade. I reside at 2104 Bluff Point Drive, Columbia, Missouri. So I own the 109-acre parcel to the south of this planned development. And main concern, I think probably my comments were captured maybe in the notes that you all had. So the original submission was pretty inadequate and didn't really explain many things at all. And that was the presentation. I'm not really sure I heard anything that has changed my mind on clarity. I don't know if you all are clear on what you're passing tonight. I'm not necessarily. So I was hoping maybe we might hear a little bit more. I'm not convinced that the science has told me that the impervious versus pervious surface of this development, these solar panels, the science is there to tell us that we're not going to have some runoff issues. I understand that the staff and the city have put together a strong stormwater BMP, which basically requires someone like myself who lives on the south side or has property on the south side of this lower elevation. It'll be the drainage collection area for this project. I contact the city. The city comes out, takes readings, and then asks the applicant to make amends or change things or do whatever's necessary to remedy the problem. So the city is allowing themselves to be, I suppose, captive to being the stormwater runoff cops and then collecting some of the expenses of whatever it takes to fix the problem from the applicant through property taxes. And the property taxes are not being paid by the developer who owns the land, but the applicant who has assumed that responsibility in their project operation. That's a pretty sort of roundabout way. City is absorbing a lot of liability in this undertaking. They've negotiated a contract in poor, if not bad faith, in my opinion, by offering the applicant the idea that they're going to give them an opportunity to bid on an industrial project in an agricultural area, which they've done, have great experience doing. And they usually do this in the middle of farmland, and no one's going to see it. Well, this is the middle of the major growth area of the city of Columbia. The Northeast that's where the city's happening. 25 years, we're talking about where we're going here. 25 years from now, someone's going to be saying, hey, what happened back in 2018 when the city of Columbia entered into this 25-year agreement? Oh, well, they told them it was going to be an industrial project, so they didn't do a lot of these things and got into a cost agreement. And anyway, I think the city is presented a concept that the applicant met, But then the city decided to change how it was going to define zoning and how the project needed to be presented, and the applicant was trapped into the cost structure that they currently have. And so they're cutting some costs here and there. And so I'm going to end up paying for those costs as someone who's a major constituent or stakeholder in this project, because my land is going to be where all the stormwater runoff collects, and I'm looking into the solar panels without buffering or screening or this and that. So there's a little bit something needs to be revised here, and I'll sit down here in a moment and give the applicant another chance to present the project maybe with more clarity. I'd like to see a little bit more science about stormwater runoff. I understand the city's and the staff is telling me that they've decided that they'll absorb the responsibility for how that stormwater is going to never go beyond what it was before the project was put in. But you understand when you talk about adverse impact, when they clear the land and put the panels up and the grass is gone and there's nothing but mud and dirt there, there's going to be a lot of issues before that grass goes back. So be forewarned what you're getting into, what you're passing along, what the city council is going to be absorbing. And then 25 years from now, somebody's going to be asking, how did this come about?
I hate to cut you off, Mr. Wade, but your time. I've given you two minutes passed. So
I'm done. I'm just giving you some concerns. In general, I like a lot of things. I think we could dot the I's and cross the T's. And I understand we're on a time constraint because we signed a contract and the city needs to get to a quota of 15% renewable energy. All these things are sort of like dangerous, I think, motivators. Thank you. So caution, please.
Thank you, sir. Commissioners, any questions for this speaker? Yes, Mr. Stanton.
The I's and T's need to be crossed from your perspective. What makes this a win-win? I'm going to go ahead and get it started. What's going to make this a win-win, make everybody happy? Let's get renewable energy, make you happy as a landowner. What things from your perspective need to happen?
Well, I would think that the applicant should be held to account and standard on level 3 screening and buffering according to code and plan development. Let's do plan development right if we're going to do it. It's the middle of a residential neighborhood. It's not the middle of agricultural areas. Okay, so let's keep the screening and buffering requirement there. That's going to add some costs to the applicant. Maybe the city will come back and say, you know what, let's revise the contract so that we absorb that cost because we kind of pitched something that wasn't quite accurate in the first place. So maybe that's a conditional pass tonight where you say the applicant's going to be held to a standard that the planning and zoning, you know, when pass UCD, we said we're going to hold these standards high. Let's hold the applicant to it, and then let's ask the city council to renegotiate that contract to absorb those costs because they kind of sold the applicant something that the applicants thought they weren't getting. Or, you know, so let's do that with screen buffer, and let's not waive that. I think the city should be concerned about putting in a little bit more prevention on the southern boundary there where all the stormwater is going to be coming into that. I'm sure some of these other neighbors who live to the west boundary are going to be talking about stormwater runoff. There's a lot of small creek tributaries that go into the Grindstone Creek there. There's a lot of water that collects in that area. It's been raging for a long time. I asked the applicant, as you can see in the notes, for some sort of a way to prevent water from seeping onto my property from the north. And I don't think they felt that they need to do that because they believe that they're not going to have an issue. But I haven't even heard anything about the science on where this storm water is coming from. So I would like to see a swale or drainage prevention creek along the southern boundary of the Dunlop property. And I outlined that in my notes, and I'd like to see that put in. And that's those two things are essentially what I believe that we need to do.
Thank you, Mr. Wade. Any additional questions, Mr. Stanton? Commissioners, any additional questions for Mr. Wade? I see none. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming this evening and the other evenings. Anyone else like to come forward this evening before I close the public hearing? Very good. Go ahead and close the public hearing. Commissioners, discussion, questions for staff, additional information needed? Mr. Stanton?
I don't want to beat up on the applicant, but being well-versed in the development world myself, if I were to be putting a project together, would I not know the buffering requirements and then bid that and then fight for the variance after and have that number already in my numbers?
Yeah, yes, you could look at it that way. I think it was, you know, this applicant obviously was under the impression that they were going to be it was going to be handled differently than it is, and so I assume the costs of these meetings and you know, the buffer and all that was not included. I think Mr. Wade, the earlier speaker, you know, had a good alternative is if we believe that is a strong point. One is we need to include it, and then two, then, you know, maybe we can give them some ideas or suggestions, and maybe the city can accommodate those trees in some fashion or help them accommodate those trees, or that, you know, it's their problem, not ours. But it sounds like that was not much of the thought process at the beginning of it, and then afterwards it kind of caught up with them and it snowballed, and then there's additional costs, not just the trees. I think if it was just the trees, my assumption is the whole process, not just the trees themselves, but everything that we're doing this evening and all the evenings before. Mr. McMahon?
I have some follow-up thoughts on that. I don't want to hold the applicant responsible for us changing our mind. That said, I'd like to revisit something. We usually, when the city has something that comes before us, by the way, our city comes and we do this process too. And the reason I bring that up is we try to obey our own laws, even though we don't have to. That they would have been waived up front. If this had been a water and light situation straight up front, they would have tried as much as possible to meet all of our requirements. And I would hope that in the future, when we're negotiating things like that, we communicate that to everyone's putting in the RFP. I don't know all the details on what made a change from public to a private entity, but I can respect this applicant's concern. They had a signed contract and the things are, it appears to me as if they had a signed contract and the things changed. Is that, to respond to Mr. Toohey, I would like to see all, you know me, I'd like to see all those buffers and all those trees. But that process, I'm not happy with the process, I guess is what I'm trying to say here.
Mrs. Burns?
While I understand what Mr. McMahon's saying, I think that there's a reason why we have planning and zoning here, and in order to make this a better project, it isn't out in the middle of farmland. It is in a developed area, and I think the buffering is very important. So I guess I would be in favor of this project if we went back to the buffering that was required and not the variance for the buffering.
Can I ask a clarification by Mr. Palmer? Help me understand, is there two different components to the buffering? Is it the buffering around the residential and then the street trees? There are two different topics, correct?
Yeah, there's actually three different components, if you will. There are street trees that are required along any street frontage of a new development of any kind at 40-foot intervals. And then
So in this, to keep it simple for me, on this case, can you tell me on this drawing where that would be along
They're all required along I-70 Drive Southeast.
And in the future.
And then in the future, they're required along the roadway along the west side. But as I stated, the traffic division indicated that they're not ready for that roadway to be built, essentially, and so the city has taken that responsibility in the future, and as such, we'll take responsibility to those street trees because they need to be planted after the street is in place.
And how wide again was that street?
The right-of-way 60 feet, I believe.
So there'd be a 60-street buffer for a long time before trees would be built.
There's a horizontal separation buffer, if you will, there of at least 60 feet, plus the 25-foot setback that they've imposed on themselves, which would typically be only be on one side, right? It would be the front setback and the rear setback.
You have a southern boundary, and then you have the west.
Right. But I was talking about the setback, that they would typically be required a front yard of 25 feet and a rear yard of 25 feet. That's and then correct. Side yards would be 10, I believe.
Yeah.
So they're offering additional buffer space without the landscaping. And then again, they are offering the required privacy fence. And they are using a privacy fence along those frontages. They are using more chain link style fence elsewhere, but along those frontages where there are existing homes and also potential residential developments. So along that southwest corner on both sides, they are proposing a wooden privacy fence. And then again, they're pushing the privacy fence back on the south side, an additional 50 feet in order to maintain the existing trees. Because basically, if they install the required screening and buffering aspects, they would have to take out all those trees, put the fence on the property line, and then the landscape buffer, would then be inside of the screening device on their property. That's how the code is written in that respect.
Mr. Tuohy.
So just to ask a clarifying question with this. So the city would only be adding trees later on the west side, but not along the I-70 side to the north, correct?
Correct. That was the discussion we had about it. In the instance that at some point in the distant future, the city decides to redevelop, well, it's actually a MoDOT roadway along the outer road. So it would be MoDOT that would be asked for those street trees. They may or may not comply with that. They don't have to. If the city for some reason were to redevelop it, they would potentially try to plant them at that time. But
then with the wood fence, I mean, you got a shelf life 10-15 years on a wood fence, so who's responsible for the maintenance of that? And then who would have to replace, would they have to replace that at some point? Would that be a city
It'd be
responsibility?
The applicant's responsibility.
It'd be applicants just like any other fence. Whoever owns the land and the fence, that would be their responsibility.
I guess my concern with this project is, you know, for the last 20 years at least, there have been conversations about having, you know, beautification ideas along I-70. And I don't think a solar farm is, you know, as beautiful as apparently the applicant thinks. And those are just my two cents with this.
Additional discussion, commissioners? Mr. Harder.
I noticed in just a few of the slides too, it seemed like they were in pretty rural and agricultural areas. I mean, it is kind of in a area of Columbia that I think we're gonna see more growth without the buffers. I kind of think that it's missing some buffering.
Mr. Stanton.
This project, as a city, we're bumping heads. We want renewable energy. We're trying to be clean. We're trying to be a greener community, which is definitely Columbia. But we don't want to look at it. I kind of agree. I think solar panels are pretty sexy. I think they're cool. You know, and it shows our progressiveness as a community. My concern is the trees affecting the total wattage that's produced and blah, 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 and the contract you have with the city to produce said amount of electricity. And why wasn't that argument made? I mean, you know, kind of.
Just to
Mr. Moran.
Respond to Mr. Stanton. Anthony, you got me thinking win-win here. You know you do. Sorry, inside joke there. I was thinking about that. This is a northern exposure. So the amount of energy they're going to draw on there is low. And I was with you when I looked at these, you know, your line of thinking there when I looked at this. I was thinking if we do have any tree screening, we're going to have to be very cognizant because of what they do, how tall they get, how full they get, how close to the panels they are. Obviously, that analysis is in everyone's mind, but it doesn't seem like it's really been done. I would like to see the trees there. I would. I wish Mr. Griggs was sitting right here. We could get a win-win through that way, because over time, they're going to need this out there. They are going to need buffering. But I'm not sure. I'm hesitant to extract monies for from the applicant at this juncture when I don't really consider it their fault. I don't like it, Mr. Tui. I do not like where it's gone, but.
Mr. Tui?
If we had another applicant come up to us, a private applicant, and say, I didn't budget for trees for the buffer, there's no way we would approve it. I don't see why this would be any different.
The only caveat to respond to that, if I may, is Mr. that Mayor? They already had a contract with the city that wasn't going to require that type of thing.
We do the same thing when someone goes and buys a piece of property, when they have it under contract with the seller, but they're not going to purchase it until they decide what we're going to do. There's contracts there also. So I don't see this as any different. I mean, I understand the plight of the applicant. I totally do. I'm a big proponent of solar. But at the same time, if we had someone else approach us and say, I didn't budget for buffer, I've already purchased a property or have it under contract, you know, now I can't do the project, there's no way we would let someone do that without meeting the code requirements for buffering. That was one of the huge debates we had when we were putting the code together.
Mr. Zinner, can I have Mr. Go ahead. Can you help me? The level three is a 10-foot landscape strip and then 8-foot screening device. Is that correct? Would that be a level three?
Yes. Now, there is plant material requirements that would go in that.
But there's more to it, but that's kind of the gist.
The gist.
The applicant is offering a 8-foot screening device at 25 feet setback on that west side, correct?
That is correct. That's actually behind a 66-foot wide future right of way.
It seems to me that we're getting more from the applicants than the level three in this sheer setback. Now, we may not be getting the planting materials quantity, maybe, but we're getting the setback so much more greater, which is going to help us with the impervious surface drainage. And I mean, that's all going to
the roadway, isn't it?
It is on the west side, but we're giving additional, you know, 25 feet on top of that too, when a level three is only 10 feet of landscaping material. So we're getting 15 feet more by the applicant, if I'm thinking that correctly.
That I think from a simple math perspective, yes. Now, Mr. Palmer, I opened up the UDC. The required setback in an industrial zone against a residential zoning district, a side yard setback, is actually 20. So it's 20 feet from the property line. So basically, you're getting an additional 5 feet of setback from what would be the platted right-of-way line back. So instead of 20, we're getting 25. They're putting the fence, actually, proposed to put the fence at 25. The space between the back of the right-of-way and then the fence of 25 feet would be improved with the trees at the time that the roadway was installed, as Mr. Palmer pointed out. That would be a city capital expense along with that. In the interim period, however, you're dealing with 66 plus 25, which is, 81 feet, from the adjoining residential property line of not having any solar panel. You're also moving the solar farm on the southern property line 75 feet back from that adjoining property, almost an equivalent amount, and preserving existing vegetation and still installing an 8-foot fence. I would suggest that it could be conceived that the trees that are between the property line and the fence in that 75-foot buffer, while technically within the code, they can't be counted toward meeting the landscape screening that is supposed to be on the inside of the fence. The trees that are probably there probably are far more effective at screening the solar facility on the southern property line than any brand new vegetation ever would be out of the gate. When you look at the adjoining southwest corner of the property, as Mr. Palmer pointed out, I would suggest that you are getting at least more on the southern property line. The screening on the inside of the fence really won't do anything effectively for the southern property owners. It'd do far less than the existing vegetation line, which if they were required to put the fence in where our code standard placement is, you would damage the trees that are there today. And that doesn't make common sense to us as a staff. Now, it is the prerogative of the commission and council. Commission can make the recommendation of reductions, and council can approve them. If you so choose not to, you know, that's your recommendation moving forward, and then council can address the issue from the applicant's requested perspective, and they may override the commission or not. I think we're looking at what do you get, what's the best solution possible here, not necessarily the most convenient for the applicant. I think we're looking at what's the practical solution here, and how does that fit into the context here. The industrial designation of this property has to deal just with the type of utility use that this is. It doesn't necessarily have anything to connotate the impact that a solar facility creates. Our code did not contemplate solar. It does not have solar within it, and you all who have been long enough with us know that. It does not have a solar category. And so if this were a public utility, which would have been regulated by the PSC or some other entity, this would have not even come before this commission, would not have gone before city council. It would have gone directly to a building permit to clear the land and to allow the facility to be built right out of the gate with no public involvement. This process has resulted in a significant amount of public engagement from city staff to review it and the opportunity to be here this evening. I'd like to suggest or at least point out that the RFP process that was submitted by our water and light department did not specify that proposals had to be within inside the city's corporate limits. It didn't even have to be inside the state of Missouri. It had to be somebody that could provide us solar as a part of our energy portfolio. There was no discussion about zoning-related matters and what the conclusion would be of what this project may fit or accommodate. So under what zoning classification, until the parameters of the project were brought to our attention as a city staff, as a part of basically working through the permitting process, it was concluded that, as Mr. Palmer pointed out, our law department reviewed what the business operation was, looked at how it fit into the definitions of a public utility, and it did not comply with those. As such, if it's not a public utility, it's got to be a private utility, and a private utility would generally be considered industrial in nature, hence we're going through this process. We did not either contemplate that this would be where we are today, but this is where we are. As far as for incorporating the costs or being able to have known that the costs needed to be incorporated in, nobody would have known that, but that was not that wasn't an omission of the RFP process at all. I'd like to make sure that that is known. The RFP process didn't include what their zoning authorization or their construction program would have to go through. All of that, of course, came after the fact, after they tried to go ahead and start to yield permits for this project to begin this process of construction. So the RFP was simply to get a qualified bidder to be able to supply solar energy to the city of Columbia and then enter into a power purchase agreement with the city in order to have that purchase back and put back into the city's infrastructure system for electric usage.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Mr. McMahon, do you have
a... I do have a question, and I may have a way forward. Mr. Palmer, can you go back to the slide that refers to the north side street trees, please? This is one of three sets of waivers, if I just read the previous slide correctly.
Yep.
I'm of the mind here, Mr. Toohey and Commissioner and other commissioners, that we follow the code as close as we possibly can, and if council wants to override us, they can do that. Here's what I'm thinking about making a motion to approve this with the last two waivers, but not the street tree waiver, requiring the street trees.
On 70,
on the outer road. That's what I'm thinking. And if council has better wisdom or they've got money or something like that, they can address that issue. They want to override us.
I'll second.
I'm talking this motion out. I haven't made it yet.
Maybe you should make a motion.
Mr. Strubman, I wanted to, before I went down that path, Mrs. Strubman seemed to have a question, and I
was just thinking it out loud, and I don't have a question after all. I was thinking more about the residential side is what I was thinking, and that would be addressed by the city streets at a future date.
And that's just one question, sir. Streets and roads, is they're going to do that, right? It's in the PD plan. It's just not a policy issue. When they put that street in, if and when they put the street in a corner of Catso, they're going to put those trees in.
So the street is already on the Catso plan. That's why they are required to dedicate it.
Right, but when it actually gets built, we collectively are going to put
those.
So
it's shown on the plan just as a provision. We're basically showing that's there, and they're not building there. So when they come back for a final plat of the property, which will be the next step, then they have to plat the right-of-way, and then at whatever point in the future the city decides that they have the funding or they're interested in building the road, then at that time they would install the road completely according to our street standards.
Okay, just ask that question one more time. That road goes in, we as a city put those trees in.
Correct.
Yes? Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Rand.
In the matter of case 18-115, you might have to help me here, Mr. Zenner, because we want to get this wording right. Request by Cypress Creek Renewables seeking the rezoning of property on I-70 Drive Southwest. I move that we approve the plan is presented with the exception of the tree waiver along I-70 Drive Southeast. The other two waivers, bufferings, I move that they go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. Stanton. Commissioners, we have received a motion by Commissioner McMahon and received second by Commissioner Stanton. Is there any questions needed on this motion? And Mr. Zitter, you're okay with the way that it's being presented?
Yes.
Okay. I see no questions needed. Ms. Burns, when you're ready for a roll call, please.
Yes. Mr. Tuohy.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
7-0, motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Our recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council for their consideration. Public comments. Anyone from the public that would like to come forward this evening? Staff, Mr. Zenner.
Yes, your next meeting will be September 6th. We do have a work session at 5:30 p.m. We will be back in our regular room, back in 1B. So be there or be square. We will be talking more about the comprehensive plan and the updates to the future land use map. So if you recall, two meetings ago, we talked about the definitions of what makes up our land use districts. You may want to review those, maybe come prepared with any suggested changes or clarifications. And then Ms. Bacon will be providing some additional information, I believe, on some of the other topics that we have talked about previously and how we may proceed forward with additional refinements to the current future land use map moving forward. We have three items on the agenda, and two of them may be large. We have the West Ash Neighborhood Association downzoning, and this is number two, about 45 different parcels proposing to be downzoned from their current zoning. They are within the West Central Columbia Neighborhood Action Plan's boundaries. And are generally more clustered than our last downzoning action. We also have Landmark Hospital. This is not the one that is off of Old 63. This is down at Discovery Park off of Nakona. This is a brand new facility, and this is a PD plan approval. This particular property is comprised both of plan district zone property as well as MC zone property that's part of a much larger track that ties into the Discovery Park GANs interchange. And then the final item on the agenda will be the Business Loop 70 corridor plan public hearing. This is being held in advance of council consideration of a potential adoption of the corridor plan as a element or a sub-plan of the comprehensive plan Columbia imagined.
Just so you have an idea of where our downzoning parcels are, the map on your left shows those in a generally in a generalized manner. We have the two outliers that are there to the north, and then to your right is the actual area that the Landmark Hospital is proposing to do their new facility. The purple line is actually the zoning boundary between the plan district and then the MC zoning that is to the east, paralleling basically US 63 toward the interchange. That is all we have for this evening. If you have any questions, more than happy to answer. Otherwise, thank you very much for your attendance and your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioners, Mr. McMahon.
I have a request, and then I'll have that motion we're all looking for. Attorney Caldera and Manager Zinner, I would love to put on a future agenda somewhere where we address, while we're making amendments to the new code, we address alternative energy situations so we're not in this boat again, be they water, air, whatever, because obviously we have a disconnect.
And I think you said alternative energy?
Alternative energies, where we have solar or wind or geo, whatever we have, so we're ready when someone like these come before us and we can understand that issue. With that, thank you for putting it on some future agenda. With that, I have a motion.
If I see no additional questions, we'll take a motion.
I move we adjourn.
You have a second?
Second.
We are adjourned. Have a nice evening.